The Ice Giant, a Stargate Atlantis fanfiction by Tipper, read by Tasmi. Relationship, Rodney and John. Part 4 of the I Sometimes Wonder series. Summary: floating deep inside the atmosphere of an ice giant is a hidden outpost, another of Janice's secret creations. The Lost Tribe have raided it, but figuring out what the Asgard were after is the least of the team's problems. They have to find a way out first. Oh, and John is still not dealing. Maybe he finally will, provided the team can figure out how to save his life. Chapter 1. Perilous Turmoil. "How bad is it?" Tayla asked. Rodney's expression was bleak, nor did he answer the question. It would not have worried her that much, except that Rodney was not a quiet person. If he were babbling incoherently, she would not be worried. Rodney worried. And wordless? That meant it was bad indeed. "What can we do?" she asked instead. "I don't know if there is anything we can do," he admitted, sharp eyes absorbing the information on the screens pulling down before him, hands shaking as they hovered over the console. "Rodney, it's not like I'm holding back on you. The Naquadah generator has stopped the station from continuing to fall, yes, but using it for that purpose means we don't have enough power to use the transporter to get us back up to the jumper platform. The generator is also only a stopgap. It will fail eventually. And, of course, even if we did have the power to use the transporter beam, we can't. And I don't..." He trailed off, sounding lost. Tayla frowned, looking out the transparent shell that encased the station, the incredible swirling blue and white gas atmosphere outside, still a wonder to behold. Thousands of shimmering crystals resembling diamonds filled the air, bouncing gently off the transparent surface, glittering in the station's light. It was sublime. She recalled how Rodney had been beyond excited to learn that Janice had hidden a small floating station inside the atmosphere of an ice giant, a type of exoplanet that was still a mystery to those on Earth. But upon arriving, everything, as always, had gone wrong. Although she could not fault Rodney, coming here had not been his choice, and he had done everything he could to be prepared. He could not have known. None of them could. A whirring, whooshing noise filled the room. Tayla braced herself that her skin tingled and her hair lifted off her shoulders, swirling into her face. Pressure built up around her, hurting her ears as if the atmosphere in the room had suddenly intensified. It was like being in a sandstorm without the sand or the storm. "We see the station has settled back on a stable trajectory through the atmosphere." A voice that sounded eerily like John said, "We thank you." "It's only temporary," Rodney shouted spitefully, eyes tightly shut, his shoulders hunched against the onslaught of wind and pressure. "We don't have enough power, and we also know you can mess with the environmental controls in here. Must you do this every time? We get it. You're in charge. We're not fighting you." The storm dissipated without a response, and Rodney sagged against his console. "You will find a way," Tayla said. Rodney looked at her, eyes full of doubt. "Yes," she said, "you will, because you must." "Oh, it's up to me," he muttered. "Good thing to know some things never change." She went up to him then, resting a hand on his trembling shoulder. "He will be fine." He shook his head, looking up at the screens again with watery blue eyes, as if they might have changed and given him a different perspective. "He will," she said, assuring herself as much as Rodney, though in her heart, she knew it was killing him not to know if John was all right. Ronan they could at least talk to, and he had said Shepard seemed well. Being cut off from them was, frankly, it was killing her too. But she needed Rodney focused if they were to survive this. Tell us again how you came to be here, Shepard's voice said. Ronan sighed, resting his head against the wall and banging it a few times. He was sitting on the floor opposite the chamber Shepard was in, feeling useless and hating every second of this. I've already told you how, he snarled. Tell us again. He frowned at the console in the room with him, which was currently showing him Shepard's steady heartbeat. He guessed they could find a way to stop it if they wanted to. We came because the guy that built this place, Janice. Yes, that guy. He had this other lab in the city where we came from. Atlantis. Ronan glared at the ceiling, as if whatever was talking to him might be up there. Except it wasn't. The voice came from everywhere in this weird glass and metal room, and it was damned annoying. If you already know all this, he started. We need to confirm what we have learned from John Shepard's mind. Ronan's eyes looked into the next room, another glass-walled chamber just like the one he was in, except a lot smaller, more like a closet. Shepard stood still in the middle of it, his head down, a white, thick fog filling the air around him. It was kind of like a stasis chamber, except he could see Shepard breathing. Whatever, he muttered. Tell us again why you are here. Ronan gritted his teeth, but did as he was told, since he really didn't have a choice. John's life, and likely theirs too, depended on it. A beacon went off in Janice's lab on Atlantis. We knew it was those little gray dudes that they triggered it. Rogue Asgard. Yes, them. Smart, pantless, annoying. And callous and cruel, per Shepard's memories. Ronan sneered. Yeah, he shrugged. They killed a lot of people a couple years ago, turning on this other device that Janice made. It made Stargates blow up. They didn't care. Confirmed. So once we knew it was them, and they were messing around on the station, we had to come to stop them if we could, or at least figure out what they might have taken so we can stop them another way. How did you get here?
Jumper. Took us a week's travel from the nearest gate.
What is a jumper?
A ship.
There is no ship attached to this station.
No, Ronan sighed again. That's because this isn't the only station. There's another high above us somewhere. Upper atmosphere. The jumper's there. We used a transporter from the platform to get down here.
Yes. There was a pause. You did not know that the transporter harmed us. We will be in pain for many years now, until the effect of its dissipate in our atmosphere.
Ronan twisted his lips a little. Yeah, he shrugged again. Sorry, we didn't even know you existed.
Why did you not fly your ship down to this station?
Piranhas.
What?
Ronan drew in a deep breath. According to McKay, the atmosphere outside this station is so corrosive or damaging or whatever, bringing the jumper down here would be like dropping a bag of meat into a pool of piranhas.
We don't know what that means.
If you're in Shepard's head, you know. He showed me and Taylor a video. There's some seriously messed up fish.
What are fish?
Ronan buried his head in his hand and yelled in frustration.
Are the fish relevant? John asked.
No, Ronan shouted, banging his fists on the floor where he was sitting. They are not. All that matters is you have my friend in that chamber and you're not letting him out. We're doing what you ask. Give him back.
We cannot. He is the only reason we can speak to you, and you have not finished confirming his story.
Ronan closed his eyes, counted to 10, and then drew in and released a deep breath. It was a trick he'd been given by Heitmeier. He missed her sometimes. More than sometimes. Fish are aquatic animals that swim in water, Ronan told the voice. Some can kill you. Most cannot.
Thank you.
You're not welcome.
Taylor hugged her weapon to her chest, though she knew it was useless in this situation.
Rodney had gone back to trying to undo the Asgardian sabotage of the station's power system. He had managed to undo the damage to the station's weight distribution system, which was half the problem. But without power, he said, it would not last long. Truthfully, Tayla had not entirely understood the science behind what Rodney was calling the weight distribution system. All she knew was that the station floated in the atmosphere by pretending to be the same density as the vapor in the air around it. It was via some sort of technological trickery she could not begin to understand. Rodney had seemed to understand it, however, and the entities that lived within this ice giant's atmosphere were intent that he fix it. Turning her gaze to the window at the beautiful swirling gas shimmering outside, she tried to pull herself into the shoes of the beings that were holding them hostage. Perhaps if she could connect with them somehow, she could find a solution. When they had analyzed Janus's information on the planet, they had learned he had removed the power sources for the transporter connecting the jumper platform in the upper atmosphere to the main station down here, just above the planet's troposphere. He had given no explanation as to why, though Rodney's guess at the time was that it would make the main station even harder to find. If a wraith or another ancient stumbled across the jumper platform, they would never know there was something else here without a working transporter. It had made sense. To make the transporters work, Rodney had brought 2 Naquita generators to power each transport station. He'd wanted to bring a third, but Mr. Woolsey was concerned they did not have enough to spare. Rodney had also brought suits capable of surviving, however briefly, in a methane-rich environment, and several packs of patching equipment in case they found anything damaged. He had prepared as much as possible, but, as always, it was never enough. He had not planned for the Asgardians having sabotaged the station, sending it falling, or more accurately, sinking, Rodney had said, towards the core the moment they arrived. They had also not planned on having to save an entire species of sentient, gaseous creatures that lived in the atmosphere of the ice giant at the same time. Not that the creatures had asked for their help. No, they were forcing it. To start, the transporter beam that connected this station to the jumper platform caused them irreparable pain and harm. They were demanding Rodney find another way to get off this station, one that didn't involve the transporter. According to Rodney, that did not exist. Second, after the rogue Asgard stole the information and technology from this station, which, Rodney said, concerned research into psychic links, it was likely yet another attempt by Janus to slow down the Wraith, who were highly dependent on their psychic network. They had sent the station on a collision course with the planet's core to destroy it. But when it did, it would take a substantial portion of this planet's sentient life with it. Sentient, gaseous life. Life that was currently using Colonel Shepard as a mouthpiece. Ronan had told them that Shepard seemed all right inside the chamber he had been trapped in, but they could not really know. What they did know was that the creatures on this planet were using his voice to talk to them. It was, as Rodney accurately stated, creepy. So the creatures that lived here were acting in self-defense? The unfortunate consequence was that it could result in all their deaths. She opened her eyes. Yes, she could understand why the entities were being so intractable. The problem was, she could not yet see a means to change their minds about also trying to help them get back to the jumper if Rodney could not fix this problem. With a frustrated sigh, she walked up to the transparent outer shell, resting her hand against what felt like glass, but which, according to Rodney, was a transparent crystallized carbon similar to what made up the crystals within ancient equipment. The station was amazingly beautiful. Unlike Atlantis, all the exterior walls were crystal, rounded, and completely see-through. The interior walls were a mix of gas and metal, and the design on them was fluid and dynamic. In a way, Atlantis was not. It likely reflected Janus thinking versus that of his compatriots. "Damn it!" Rodney snapped, slamming a hand on the console and breaking her reverie. Why? Why do this? Tayla turned to look at him. Why do what? They could have just destroyed the information here, the data. Why destroy the station? Why to go to all this? Oh. He deflated as suddenly as he'd exploded. Oh, God. Oh? It was a trap. A trap. For us. He lowered his head. They triggered the beacon on purpose. He seemed to collapse a little on himself then. That's why the station only started sinking when we got here. I should have thought of that. If I thought of that, we might not be here and the creatures wouldn't be in danger. You were not alone in that briefing room, Rodney. No, but I'm the one in charge of figuring stuff out. Why didn't I think, oh, maybe they want us to die. The only other beings in the galaxy capable of slowing down their plans on galactic genocide. And then maybe we'd have been better prepared. Tayla sighed. We still could not have known about the life forms on this planet. Rodney grimaced. No, I suppose not. Really, Janice could have been a little forthcoming about that. Yes. He looked at her, his expression pained. I just don't know what to do, he admitted softly. I don't know how to fix this. The power system, fixing the code to get us floating again, no problem. But they physically damaged the engines. I just don't have the tools or the parts. She nodded. She knew he hated it when he could not solve a problem on his own. He felt somehow impotent as a result, as if it were the only thing that made him worth anything. He needed a distraction. Should we radio Ronan? Tayla asked then. Perhaps he can tell us a little more about what is happening with John. He nodded, gaze turning despondently once more to the screens. Tayla clicked her radio. Ronan, Tayla's voice rang in his ear, and Ronan was immediately on his feet. Tayla, hey, has McKay fixed the thing yet? He has stopped us from falling, yes, but only by supplementing the power core of this station with our Naquita generator. But, Ronan frowned, don't we need to get out of here? They will not allow us to use the transporter to leave. Ronan's eyebrows lifted. Why not? It harms them. I know, but we cannot use the transporter. We only need to use it one more time, Ronan argued, and he looked toward the chamber Shepard was trapped in. Come on, just one more, and we'll destroy that platform in the upper atmosphere. Then no one else can come down here and screw with this place ever again. The creatures using Shepard's voice didn't respond. Listen to me! He yelled, ramming his fists on the wall. You have to let us go. Tayla felt something strange then, an odd tickle in the back of her mind. For a moment, she could almost sense Ronan's anger. In a way, she could sense the wraith. It was so incongruous, so out of place. She felt a momentary spike of fear that the wraith were somehow here. She had felt it before, when Rodney had been panicking in fear, but had put it down to her own disquiet. Now, though, this was definitely not her. A breeze tickled at her hair, and she looked out the glass wall at the clouds outside. Ronan, she said, her eyes narrowing, can you get angrier? Over by the council, Rodney looked up at her in surprise. He wasn't the only one. Ronan was pacing around the room he was locked inside. Angrier? Yes, Tayla replied over the radio. Can you? Ronan smirked. Oh, he said. Yeah, definitely. Don't break anything that looks like a console, Rodney said quickly. But Ronan was already moving. There was a chair in front of the room's main console, a simple metal one with a webbed back. He picked it up and threw it as hard as he could into one of the glass walls behind which Shepard was standing. It bounced off. But it made a crack, and Ronan grinned in glee. Perhaps these interior walls were just glass. He picked up the chair again, and with a roar, wielded it like a club, the metal legs hitting the glass hard enough to crack it even more. Inside the chamber, the fog surrounding Shepard where he stood started to move, whirling around him like white streamers. "Stop!" Shepard's voice yelled. "Stop, or we will kill him!" Ronan stared at the fog, and a suspicion formed. "Can you kill him, I wonder?" he challenged. He smashed the chair and the glass again. "Or maybe I've got another way of getting him out." Ronnie looked at one of the consoles, and his eyes widened. He smacked his radio. "Ronan!" he yelled. "Stop! Stop, please! A screen just popped up showing me his vitals. They're suffocating him. Stop!" Taylor had jogged over to Ronnie's side, eyes locked on the same screen. This was not what she had hoped for, even though it had taught her something she hoped would be valuable. Over the radio, the sound of metal smacking something hard and unyielding continued. "I'm almost through," Ronan said. "I can get him out." "Before they kill him?" Rodney demanded, his voice breaking. "Please, stop. I'm begging you. His heartbeat is erratic." "Ronan," Taylor added, "Rodney is right. The risk is too great." "And," Shepard's voice came out of the station's comms, "we will no longer be able to communicate with you. He must stop." "Ronan," Rodney begged, "please, please stop, please. I can't, we can't lose him." His voice was so broken, so terrified, that she knew it would work even if Ronan could not feel Rodney's intense terror in the same way she could in that moment, amplified by the psychic link in the back of her mind. And sure enough, the banging over the radio stopped. Ronnie sagged again, collapsing almost to his knees in relief, and Taylor rested her hand on his shoulder. "Thank you," Shepard's voice said. She glared up at the speakers she could see in the wall. "That was unnecessary," she chastised. "He would have destroyed the interface chamber in his anger," the voice said. "And yet," Taylor contested, "you were enjoying his doing so, were you not?" Taylor stared at her in utter confusion. "What?" he asked. "They were what?" She simply lifted her eyebrows and looked up again. "Am I wrong?" she asked the creatures using John's voice. "You shared a psychic bond," she said then. "A link, not dissimilar to an ability I have with those we call the Wraith. Yours is powerful, and I suspect your number's great enough that even I can pick up on it. And in that moment, when I first asked Ronan to get angrier, I sensed excitement." "Excitement?" Ronnie repeated. "Really? Why would anyone care if Ronan..." "Yes," the voice said. Taylor smiled, pleased to know she had been correct. Rodney's jaw just dropped. "Then perhaps," Taylor said, "we can negotiate a deal." "This is insane," Rodney muttered, following Taylor down the stairs that had previously been closed by the entities through their control of John. "We can't seriously be considering this." "We are doing this," Taylor said patiently, because sometimes with Rodney, patience was not just a virtue, as Elizabeth used to say, but a necessity for sanity. "They are opening the doors and allowing us to pass through them, are they not?" Ronnie just pursed his lips in annoyance, but said nothing more as they finally hit the lower level where Ronan and John were being held. Taylor followed the directions Ronan had given her, and as she walked up to the room with the ancient word for communications. Initially, they had assumed it was for communicating with ships, perhaps even Atlantis. Clearly not. As the door switched open, Ronan leapt out, gun raised, only for Ronnie to whip up his hands while Taylor just gave the Satidan a heavy stare. Ronan grinned, lowered the gun, and then waved them inside the room. Ronnie followed hesitantly, then instantly was at the glass wall separating them from John. His fingers touched the cracks from Ronan's attack. "You will let him go," Taylor said, looking up. "We will let him go," John's voice agreed. "You will take his place." "I will." "Insane," Ronnie repeated. "I don't understand this at all." "I'm not clear on it either," Ronan said, giving her a doubtful look. She sighed. "I will explain again," she said. "Once John is released from the interface device, because that, as it turned out, was what it was originally designed for. The entities, however, had figured out how to use whomever was in the chamber to control parts of the station. So when John had stepped inside to look at the console in the interface chamber, the doors had shut, and he was theirs. She then rested her hands on her hips and waited. Rodney grumped and turned to the console in this room that clearly monitored the interface. Ronan started to pace, his gaze straying to the metal chair that he must have used as a bludgeoning tool earlier. "Here we go," Rodney said softly, looking up from the console to the interface chamber. As he spoke, the white and gray fog in the room dissipated and John's head lifted. The colonel bleaked open his eyes, shook himself, and turned around. At the sight of the three of them, he raised a hand and pointed at the chamber door. Rodney nodded and hit a crystal on the console. The door swished open, and John stumbled out. Ronan was right there, taking his arm. "Are you all right?" Rodney asked. "What?" John asked, clearly a little befuddled as he looked around. "What happened?"
"You do not recall?" Taylor asked.
"I only recall walking into that room, the door shutting, the smell of lavender, then nothing."
"Lavender?" Ronnie repeated, lip curling slightly.
"Like a grandmother's house?" John shook his head, loosening himself from Ronan's hold. "And I have one hell of a headache."
"Here," Taylor said, handing him a water bottle from Ronnie's backpack. John took it and immediately took a drink.
"But you're okay otherwise?" Rodney pressed.
Look, just tell me what's going on. What happened?"
"Aliens took you hostage," Ronan said. John's eyebrows shot up.
"What?" "It's a little more complicated than that," Taylor said, frowning at Ronan. "They're sentient beings that existed inside the atmosphere of this planet. The chamber you were locked in allows you to speak with them."
"It's an interface chamber," Rodney added. "Except over time, I guess they've learned to do more than just communicate with the person in the chamber. They had learned how to actually speak through the person and even use them. If they've got the gene to manipulate some of the aspects of this station, like doors and the chamber itself."
"They used you to not only communicate with us," Taylor continued, "but used you as a hostage to force us to help them."
"Hostage," John rubbed at his neck, still obviously trying to catch up. "Help them with what?"
"The Asgard sabotaged the system that keeps this station afloat in the atmosphere of this ice giant," Rodney said. "The impact would have resulted in an explosion that would have wiped out a significant portion of the creatures that exist here, if not all of them."
"Oh," John said, accepting that the same way he often accepted the often incredible tech of the ancients and strange alien entities with a hand wave.
"Okay. And you fixed it?"
"No," Rodney frowned.
"Well, yes, but only temporarily."
"Oh.
Look, you're acting kind of funny," Rodney said with a narrowed gaze. "You sure you're okay?"
John sighed heavily, ranking a hand through his hair as if having to think about that. "I'm a little disoriented. I'm sorry, but I feel fine. Just," he shrugged, "a little weirded out, and my head is pounding like I have one hell of a hangover. How long was I in there?"
"About a day," Rodney replied, his voice tight.
"Explains why I'm so thirsty," John said, drinking some more water.
"They threatened you a lot," Ronan said, "and nearly suffocated you when I tried to get you out." He gestured to the cracked glass. Shepard frowned slightly as he took that in.
"Well, if they were trying to not to die, I guess they might have reason to be a little rough," he admitted. He raised his eyebrows, looking at Rodney.
"So you didn't solve the problem long term?"
Rodney shook his head.
"No."
John frowned.
"Then why did they let me out?"
Rodney and Ronan looked at Taylor. She drew in a deep breath.
"I offered them a deal," she said.
John's gaze narrowed immediately.
"What kind of deal?" he asked, more alert, as if he knew he was not going to like the answer.
"They had you," she protested, "and would not have released you if I had not made this deal."
"Taylor," John warned.
"I offered to take your place," she said. "But..."
She held up a hand before he could respond. I will not merely be a puppet as you were. I will be able to interact with them as the chamber was originally designed. In addition, it is unlikely that they can use me as they did you to control aspects of this station, since I do not have the ATA gene. We think, Ronnie stressed. We don't actually know, he said to John. John's frown deepened. We also, Taylor continued before John's ire could fester much more, need to continue to try to permanently solve the station's inevitable collapse into the planet's core. I don't understand, John said.
Which part? Ronan asked. Taylor almost smacked him.
It seems to me, John said, his voice low, that this was not a great deal for these creatures. They already had me. Why would exchanging you for me be something they would want, especially if, as you say, this could lose them the ability to control the station?
You're gonna love this, Rodney muttered. John gave him a quieting look.
I have promised that they can ask us questions, Taylor said, blushing slightly. About our emotions.
John's eyebrows lifted, his chin jutting forward in surprise.
Our what now?
Told you, Rodney said. Ronan smirked.
These creatures do not experience emotions as we do, Taylor said. They are, I suppose you would say, unusually serene. A little like these people on that television show that Rodney likes so much.
She means Vulcans.
Yes, Taylor said. These creatures, because they are psychically linked to each other, have evolved into beings that do not or cannot express extreme emotions like we do. To remain in balance with each other, they must be balanced emotionally. During your incarceration in the interface chamber, I noticed they were inordinately interested in Ronan's anger and Rodney's fear.
Fear? John looked at Rodney. Rodney looked away, blushing slightly.
Regardless, she jumped back in before John could say something else. They would like us to describe some of our more intense emotions to them. Because they are naturally psychic, they can feel what we feel to some degree. Even see it if there is a strong memory associated with it. And I have promised them we would be as honest as we can with our answers.
John's expression was dour, and Taylor knew why. Of the four of them, John was the least expressive emotionally, his stoicism his armor, especially when in the field. Ronnie was the type of person who tried to hide his emotions, but did so poorly. Ronan, of course, was the most emotive of them all.
The colonel turned away from her then, looking to Ronnie and Ronan.
What do you think?
Ronnie shook his head.
It's all a bit moot if I can't figure out how to stop this station from sinking again when the generator fails.
So this issue is about power, John said.
Yeah, the Asgard destroyed the power system. I hooked up the generator and it's keeping us afloat, but it will fail again.
When?
Oh, a couple of months? That's not the immediate problem. Our bigger issue is being trapped here. While the generator is maintaining the system that keeps us afloat, we have no means to transport out of here. Not that we could anyway. Using the transporter hurts the creatures. They won't let us use it.
Who cares what they want? Ronan said then. We don't owe them anything.
What does that mean? Taylor asked, bristling, because she knew exactly what he was saying.
They threatened Shepard. Almost killed him. They terrorized McKay. We can't fix their problem. Shepard's free now. Let's just go.
What? Rodney, this time. He looked surprised.
Hook the generator back up to the transporters, Ronan said. Get out of here. Jumper home.
But they'll die, Rodney said, clearly thrown by the idea. This station will fail if we don't do something. If I unhook the generator, it'll impact in less than a day. It'd take us over a week just to get back to Atlantis to get replacement parts. We couldn't make it back in time.
So? Ronan challenged.
But, Ronnie looked at Taylor, then John, then back to Ronan. I mean, we can't do that.
He looked at Taylor. Can we?
No, she answered. And it is not what I promised. Taylor glared at Ronan. Rodney is correct.
We cannot leave these beings to die because of us. They did not create this situation. Leaving them with this station on a collision course with the planet is tantamount to permitting genocide. They were going to kill us, Ronan replied, crossing his arms. Why should we help them? They let John go on my word, Taylor snapped. I will not go back on that. I'm also, Ronnie looked uncomfortable. I would also have an issue with just leaving. Though if we can't figure something out, he grimaced, eyeing Taylor with some embarrassment, we might have to. But we are not there yet, she said. Enough, John said. Instantly, all three quit arguing, turning to him. We will try this your way, Taylor, for the moment, John said. But we also know we only have enough food and water for a couple of days down here. Once that food runs out, we will leave. Taylor opened her mouth to argue again, but John held up a hand. No, this is non-negotiable. These creatures cannot expect us to die of starvation for them. She frowned, but part of her thought of Torn growing up without a mother, and knew he was right. Starving to death would not help save these creatures. They could only stay as long as they had the means to do so. She inclined her head. The colonel inclined his head in return. But you're not going into that chamber, he said then. That's not happening. Not if they can trap you in there. Taylor straightened. But I can rig it so they can't trap her like they did you, Ronnie said quickly. She'll be fine. Taylor wanted to hug him in that moment. No, John said. We're not risking it. I can do it, Ronnie said. I've heard that before. Yes, you have, and with one exception, I have always done what I said I could. It was a big exception. Taylor saw Ronnie grit his teeth momentarily before saying, This is not like Duranda. This is a room with straightforward controls that definitely work, not an impossible-to-control weapon based on a broken system. And if I'm wrong, then Ronan will just smash through that glass wall. She'll be fine. I want to do this, John, Taylor said, irritated that John had deflected this discussion away from what she wanted to what Ronan could do. I don't trust. If you force me to break my word, Taylor said then, her voice steeling, I will leave Atlantis. John's eyes widened as he looked at her. What? I will leave. I will take Torin and go.
You don't mean that.
You know I do. I trust Rodney. I will be fine. John studied her, frowning now before turning to Rodney again.
You are absolutely certain.
At some point, Rodney snarled, you have to start trusting me again. It's been 5 years, John. 5 years. If I wasn't certain, I would tell you.
There was a long pause then, and Taylor felt the rising tension in the room. This was her idea, her promise that needed to be upheld. But this moment, this pause, it became about the two of them. This connection that they had that was beyond anything she or Ronan had with either of them. She felt the prickle at the back of her head again. They felt it too. Finally, John drew in a deep breath and sighed heavily. Fine. Ronnie immediately turned around, did something at the console, then gestured to Taylor. She smiled at him, then at Ronan and John.
I believe in you all, she said, before stepping into the interface chamber. As the door shut, she smelled something faintly flowery, then lost all contact with her body. It felt like she was floating, and she smiled weirdly, enjoying the sensation. She could not see anything, not exactly, but in her mind's eye, she imagined herself flying through the clouds she saw outside the station, glittering diamonds surrounding her on all sides. She reached out to touch them and watched as they collected on her palm, sending rainbows cascading over her skin. Welcome, her voice said, and she looked up. Faces appeared all around her, and though she did not recognize them, she suspected the gas creatures were using the faces of the ancients that used to man the station to interact with her. They smiled, and she smiled in return. Hello, she replied. Thank you for trusting me. End of chapter 1. Chapter 2. Emotional Turmoil. Ronan stayed behind to look after Tayla, his distrust of the aliens clear. Rodney had shown him not only how to monitor her vitals, but how to release her if that needed to happen, though he agreed not to do so unless absolutely forced to. Rodney just had to trust him on that. So far, the gas creatures hadn't tried to use Tayla's voice to speak to them, but they also hadn't demonstrated any ability to control the station's systems since she'd stepped into that room. In Ronnie's head, that was a positive. He and John returned to the control room, John's silence demonstrating how uneasy he was with this whole situation. Despite that, Ronnie couldn't help but feel relieved and happy to have him back. And apparently none the worse for wear, which is always a bonus. "You sure you're okay?" he asked as they walked up to the consoles. "I'm fine," John said shortly, not even looking at him. "Just explain to me this problem again." He sighed. Of course. He would love to blame John's reticence just on the situation, but John had been this way with him ever since. Since he'd made that stupid admission, and it had only gotten worse after the glitch with the solar flare, Ronnie had been angry and hurt for a while. But as time went on, and John continued to not talk to him, he just felt sad, grieving the best friend he'd lost with a few stupid words. Right, so he called up the specs for the station on the monitor, giving John an overview of how it was set up. He began by explaining that the station's shape was a bit like an egg on its side. The bottom half housed the power systems. The upper half contained the labs, the sleeping quarters, kitchen, and control systems. That interface room was somewhere in the middle, along with some of the clearly more specialized rooms. Specialized? Janice clearly knew the gas creatures were here, Rodney explained. He built vents for them so they could enter the station without being harmed by the environment in here. Nitrogen and oxygen are not great for them. They can tolerate it in short bursts, doing their equivalent of holding their breath, but it's difficult. Anyway, the labs were set up to study them and their psychic abilities. John grunted. And that's the data the Asgard stole? That data, but also some of Janice prototypes based around those abilities. Like what? I don't know yet. I have the data. Right after I started to download it, you got trapped, right? Anyway, Rodney continued, that's when they told us about the damage to the systems, and I had to use the Naquita generator to get us floating again. Even if I were to steal materials and crystals from other parts of the station, I couldn't get the original power system online. I've been trying to think of another way around it or a way to extend the life of the generator, but... Hang on. Floating? John interrupted, eyes narrowing. You said floating. We're floating here? Ronnie said with a small frown. Yes? Like a balloon. I suppose. Why were you going with this? You said you were able to stop us from sinking, like stopping a balloon from losing helium, and the system that keeps us afloat is running fine now, as if we'd been injected with more helium. Ronnie just crossed his arms, impatiently waiting for John to get to his point. Can you use that system to make us even lighter? John asked. Ronnie froze. It was like lightning in his brain. Lighter. Because, John said, if we were lighter, we could go up instead of down. Oh my God, you're brilliant, Rodney breathed, already calculating the capabilities of the weight distribution system and great power needs. It would drain the generator more quickly, but if we connect in some of the life support we no longer need, and if I cycle some of the output... How high up could we go? John asked. As high as the jumper platform? Possibly, Rodney said. Probably. Then he frowned. But that wouldn't solve the problem. Even if we could find a way to get over to the jumper platform without using the transporter, the station would still just sink again when the generator died, which would happen very quickly because lifting the station requires more power than just floating, turning months into weeks or less. Could we connect the two stations, use the jumper platform to hold this one up? Or what if we brought over the second generator powering the transporter on the jumper platform? You said months. We could attach it to this station and... and that would get us the time we need to come back with the parts to fix the power system. Yes, that could work. Or, and hear me out, John continued, could we get enough power to eject this station from the atmosphere altogether? To do what? Blow it up. Blow it up? Ronnie repeated, looking around. But we could plunder it for the equipment we can take home, remove all the remaining data, and then it's just a glass ball in space. Yes, but Ronnie felt pain to his core as he looked out of the transparent walls into the sparkling blue and white clouds. But it's beautiful. And a danger to these creatures. This way, they'd be guaranteed never to be bothered again or threatened like this. Ronnie knew he was right. Of course he was right. But this station? The chance to explore an ice giant from inside the atmosphere? The things they could learn about how planets were formed? How the universe operated firsthand? John gave him a dark look. You're not seriously putting your need for a Nobel over the creatures that live here, are you? Ronnie closed his eyes, trying not to be hurt by that. It was about so much more than getting a prize. John knew that by now, knew he'd changed, but he nevertheless seemed to know just how to stick in the knife, even if not deliberately. When he opened them again, he turned to the console to work on the task at hand. We still need to figure out how to get the jumper platform once we're up there, Ronnie told him brusquely. I'll work on that, you work on this. Ronnie gave a nod as John walked away.
Have they started talking to you yet? John asked, walking into the communications lab. Ronan's expression showed that they hadn't. He looked unhappy, staring at the console like it could give him answers. John noticed the back of the metal chair was under his hands, as if the big guy was just seconds away from swinging it at the glass wall separating them from Taylor. John gave a nod and looked at the chamber. Hey, he shouted. We gotta talk. Hello, John Shepherd, Taylor's voice responded. We apologize. We have been having an interesting discussion with Taylor Imogen. I'm sure, John said, crossing his arms. Can I talk to her? Of course. There was a pause then. John, can you hear me? Taylor? Yes. Oh, this is so strange. I can hear you, but it is as if you are standing at the bottom of a well. John flexed his eyebrows at Ronan, who also looked slightly more relaxed now that they could speak with her. Are you okay? John asked, looking at her through the glass. I am. In fact, I am more than well. This is a wonderful experience. I am sorry that you did not get to experience this as I am. John's lips pursed into a frown for a moment before he spoke again. Then they would let you leave if you asked. Yes, I have no doubt. They were frightened and in pain from the transporter, but they seem less so now. I'm apparently a calming person. They like interacting with me. I remind them of the ancients.
You? John sighed. Actually, that makes sense.
Yeah, Ronan agreed with a dark smile. It does. How is it going on your end? Taylor asked then. John gave a small shrug. We may have something. We're going to try to lift the station up higher and send it towards the jumper platform.
Really?
Yeah, and I hate to do this, but could I talk to the aliens again?
As a reminder, she said a touch pedantically. We are on their planet.
We are the aliens. John rolled his eyes as Ronan chuckled. Oh, yes. It was definitely Taylor.
Sure, if you wouldn't mind.
Not at all. There are many of them. Call again if you need me. I believe the one you will be speaking to has adopted the name Primus, if you need to speak to it directly.
John gave a shrug. There was another pause, then Primus spoke.
Hello again, John Shepherd, it said, still using Taylor's voice.
Hi. So, look, we might have a plan, but I need some information from you.
Certainly. What is the plan?
We are going to do the opposite of what the Asgard did. Instead of causing the station to crash, we're going to cause it to float higher.
Higher?
McKay is working on getting us closer to the platform where our ship is. If he gets us close enough, would using the transporter then harm you? There was a long delay then. Yes, but not as significantly. But I understand you can only use the transporter if the generator Rodney McKay has attached to the power systems is removed. Would that not cause the station to fail again? I'm hoping if it's high enough up in the atmosphere, we can find a way to tether it to the jumper platform. The platform's power engines are working fine. Or there's a jumper airlock on this station, probably for emergencies. We could then use the jumper to bring the second generator over, hook it up, and then the station will be able to be suspended up there for months. Then what? Then we come back with what we need to get the station out of your atmosphere entirely and destroy it. The delay was longer this time. John began to get antsy, glancing at Ronan, who was gripping the back of his metal chair. If the station is no longer here, we can no longer interact with the people who may visit in the future, Taylor's voice said. John didn't hide his surprise at that. What, that's a concern for you? I think you'd want people like us never to return. We would need to think about this. Please commence with raising the station up to the upper atmosphere. We will discuss your idea about what happens after that. Okay, John frowned at Ronan, who just shrugged. In the meantime, the voice continued, Taylor Amagin promised that you would each answer our questions, so we might learn more about you. That may help us make our decision. John sneered slightly. Great. I was sort of hoping you had forgotten about that. We have not. John sighed heavily. All right. He looked at Ronan, who looked unhappy with the idea as well. Let's get this over with. Several hours later, John was really, really regretting agreeing to this deal of Taylor's. He was down in the engine room, configuring the generator to more economically and efficiently provide power to the system per Rodney's specs, as Ronnie continued to rewrite the coding inside the weight distribution system in the control room. It was taking him an awfully long time, and every minute that went by, John grew increasingly embarrassed by the questions the aliens were asking him. They had asked about things like fear, mania, excitement, joy, anger, and several other emotions they apparently found fascinating. He knew they were talking to Rodney and Ronan as well, but he wondered if he were getting the worst questions. Tell us about hate. John sighed. Hate is, he frowned. It's the result of something you cannot forgive. Forgive? Yeah, we already discussed forgiveness, remember? You said it was something that not everyone was capable of. Right. Well, in addition to that, some things can't be forgiven. And when that happens, it leads to hate. Example, please. Right. So there was this one man. His name was Kolya. He then proceeded to explain what Kolya had done, invading Atlantis, torturing McKay, nearly taking Weir, then kidnapping him and subjecting him to Todd feedings, and then almost killing Rodney again. John knew without a doubt that he had not been there in time. Kolya would have killed McKay and been gleeful about it. Gleeful? Like happy, John said, but with an edge. They discussed happy already as well. So you hate this Kolya? Hated. He's dead now. And yes, for what he wanted to do to my friends, to my home, to... Yes, I hated him. Hate is the culmination of anger, Taylor said, sitting now in a pretty room in her imagination, chatting with a lovely ancient with long brown hair. You become so angry, so upset at someone or something, that you want nothing more than for them or it to go away. By killing it or them. She pondered that. Sometimes, she said. Yes, she sighed. My whole life, I have hated the Wraith for what they do to us. But lately, her gaze shifted, looking away from the earnest face of the ancient. Lately, I have begun to understand that they are not fully to blame for the fact that we are their sole food source. I hate them for many things, but, she grimaced, I suppose if there was a means for them to feed another way, and they willingly made that choice, I would not hate them as much. So hate is not permanent. No, I think it, that hate is a temporary emotion. Your hatred for something or someone can change if the object of your hate changes. But only if it changes. Yes. Or I suppose, if you do. Hate is simple, Rodney said, typing away on the code. It's what you feel when you think you have no control over a situation. Control. If something is out of your control, or someone is acting in an uncontrollable way, and it's harming you or the people you care about, then you hate it. Can it go away if you do achieve control over that thing or that person? Rodney twisted his lips and shook his head. No, not always. Why not? Because if the harm they did was so great, it cannot be undone. That kind of hate is hard to let go of. As in when you lost Elizabeth Weir, you hated the replicators for taking her from you. Rodney blinked a few times, pushing back the wetness in his eyes. No, he said. I hated me, he said softly. The replicators were just doing what they were programmed to do. Do you still hate yourself? You know, he said to the air, I really need to concentrate on this, and you're making it very hard. Can we move on? Hate is motivation, Ronan said. It can help spur you, and nothing else will. To keep fighting, to keep running. As you hated those that turned you into a runner. Yes, but not just because of that. They destroyed my world. They killed the woman I loved. Then you hate the Wraith because they took something from you. They took the person I loved, he said, seeing Melina in his mind's eye, the last moments before she was lost to that explosion, still trying to save the lives of the people in that hospital. His voice roughened. Yes, I would hate anyone who damaged or hurt anyone that I love. He looked up at the ceiling. Mark those words. You do not want me to hate you. Understand? There was silence in response to that remark then. Understood. He sighed and looked at the interface room monitors. Tayla still seemed fine. Her heart rate sped up from time to time, but if the question he was answering were being asked of her, he could understand why. Ronan Dex. What? He growled at the ceiling. What does it mean to love? Tayla smiled. No, love is not the opposite of hate. Love is much deeper than that. They were walking in a garden now, full of flowers that shouldn't all be blooming at the same time. She reached down to pluck a beautiful yellow rose off a stalk and hand it to the ancient with her, a young man now with copper-colored hair. What do you mean? He asked, taking the rose with some bemusement. Love is home, she said. The feeling of being home, in a place where you feel safe and happy and hopeful. It is warmth and strength and a sense of feeling whole. It is the way you feel when you want to be with the person that you love all the time, and you struggle when they aren't there. And even though it can be painful to be separated, you accept that they can't be with you, that they must be free to follow their dreams, even if you want them to always be by your side. You are separated from the one you love. She thought of Kanan, his trips to New Athos, the visits sometimes taking days at a time. Sometimes, yes. And you accept that. Love often also means some level of sacrifice. It requires caring about someone more than yourself, to let them do what makes them happy. He does the same for me. It sounds difficult. It can be, she said, looking off in the distance, the imaginary garden stretched on forever. If there also isn't trust, it can be. There is more than one kind of love, Ronan said. Which do you mean? What do you mean? We talked about family earlier, friends. I love the three people here, Tayla, Shepherd, McKay, that's one kind. The other kind of love is for one person, and it is more than that. More than that, how? That kind of love is fire, Ronan said, sitting down in the chair as he spoke. And passion and anger, and it makes you feel crazy, but in a good way. He smiled as he remembered his first few years with Milena, how he's beginning to feel as he danced the night away on the pier with Amelia. Is it always like that? Ronan shook his head. No, it changes. True love mellows into something softer but simpler, but also stronger and unbreakable. When you love someone, you are just content. I know there are those that think love can fade, but it doesn't. It just changes into something else. Have you felt a love like that? I did, he said, his mind seeing Milena laughing as she made them dinner one night, burning the dish as she often did. I hope to again. And as he thought about Atlantis, about his friends, about Amelia in particular, he smiled. Look, I really need to focus on this. Please answer. Rodney sighed. Love, he closed his eyes for a moment, then opened them again. When I was younger, love to me meant pain, loss, unhappiness. My parents, they must have loved each other once, but it wasn't right, and it disintegrated. He shook his head. And for a while, I saw it only as a distraction, a waste of time. Something not worth the effort people put into it. What was the point if it could only end in misery? He had stopped typing, the cursor flashing on the screen before him, waiting for input. But since I've been here, he continued, I started to love people despite what I thought I knew. Once you open that door, it's... He smiled. When you know what love can bring, the draw of it is impossible to deny. It makes you feel good when you love someone more than yourself. And you have total trust in them. You trust them to always be there for you. It can make you feel worthy, I suppose, to know that they'll always be there. I have seen that in my sister, who used to be so afraid. She's stronger than I am now. And I've seen it in others in Atlantis and throughout this galaxy. That kind of love, it's everything. And do you love someone like that? Is there someone you trust that much? Rodney took a deep breath. He looked up at the screen. The cursor continued to blink. Yes, he shrugged. But he doesn't trust me. He started typing again, determined to get this new code done. I don't know. Ask the others, John said, lying on his back as he looked up wires between the generator and the part of the engines that Rodney said needed more juice. You really don't know how to describe love. The voice sounded incredulous. John sighed. I do, I suppose. Then what is love? Baby, don't hurt me, John sung softly under his breath. No more. What? A song. Ignore that. We have a lot of songs about love, and books, and movies, and poems. Love is something humans can be somewhat obsessed with. But you're not. No. Why not? Because love is a false promise. People who tell you they love you never really do. They use you. They need something from you. Then they leave you. That earned a long silence. You do not fully believe that. John frowned. He hated that they were somewhat in his head. What do you want from me? He demanded. Honesty. He laughed. There. That. That's what love won't provide. Honesty. Why? Because when I thought I've loved people before, they let me down. My father, he loved me only when it was convenient. My ex, she loved me but couldn't accept my not being with her every second of every day. And not being able to tell her what I was doing all the time. She took that for lying because she didn't trust me. My mother... He hesitated. My mother left. And you believe that love isn't real? I know it's not. What would it be if it were real? If love were real? Yes. He tried to imagine it, to put it into words. It would be someone who loves you unconditionally, who asks nothing of you except to be with you. It is someone who would do anything for you and who would always be there for you, find you when you are lost, comfort you when you are scared, support you when you need to fight. Someone who knows you so well that when it feels like you can't go any further, they take your hand and keep you moving. And you would do the same for them, the voice asks, using Taylor's soft, soothing tones. Love them unconditionally. Do anything for them. Be there when they need you. Take their hand when they are scared. Yes. But there is no one who loves you like that. No one you love like that. John's hand shook slightly. He glared at them. They settled. No. You do not fully believe that either. Get out of my head. We are only... Get out of my head, John shouted. I have answered your stupid questions. Now get out. Why? John let go of the wire, letting it drop to the side, and pressed his hands to his eyes. Why what? He asked hoarsely. Why do you pretend that you do not love him? When you told us about love, you were thinking of one person, and you just described... Stop! Is he correct? Is it because you do not trust him? John opened his eyes, staring up at the engine. I have reason not to trust anyone, he said, picking the wire back up. I have been fooled before. And he smiled sardonically because that was another song. And you do not wish to be a fool, the voice said. That, the voice hesitated. Seems sad. He gritted his teeth and returned to hooking the wire up the machine before him. I'm almost done here, he said out loud. He hit the radio by his ear. McKay, how's it going up there in the control room on the weight distribution system? Nearly done, Rodney's voice replied. Maybe 10 more minutes and we'll be ready to go. How are you? Good. Couple more connections. I think we'll be done about the same time. All right, come up here when you're done. We'll start up this program together. Together. The word rang in his head like bells ringing out from a steeple. It was a good word. I'm sure, he said. He clicked off the radio. You are not a fool, the voice said from everywhere. The ones who left you, the ones who used you, the ones who didn't trust you, they were the fools. John smiled slightly. That, he had a strong feeling, hadn't been the aliens. That had been Taylor. Here we go, Ronnie said, hitting the crystals on the console. John stood back, watching those deft hands work. A few taps here, a nudge there, and the station shuddered slightly. He looked out the window at the swirling glass clouds outside, the diamond-like bits of ice floating inside them. Soon, it would look like the diamonds were falling past the glass wall inside of just sitting still. It's working, Rodney said, looking at the screen. We're rising. How long will this take? Not long. We're moving fast. About 5 minutes, maybe less. 5? Wow, I didn't think it'd be that quick. John Shepherd, the voice said. Rodney McKay. Yes, Rodney said, looking up. We have made our decision. Rodney looked at John. John lifted his chin. About which part? He asked. We find that humans are dangerous, the voice said, but beautiful. None of you answered the same question the same way. We wish to learn more. Rodney's lips pursed in worry. John just frowned. Meaning, John said warily. Meaning we do not wish you to blow up this station. John didn't hide his surprise. What? Then what do you want us to do? Ronnie asked, and John could tell he was secretly pleased. You have the suits, yes? Taylor Moggan told us you have spacesuits that could briefly protect you in our atmosphere. Is that correct? Yes, Ronnie answered, brow furrowing. But when we say briefly, we mean briefly, minutes at most. That is enough time. Once you reach the upper atmosphere, put on the suits and step into the airlock. We will carry you to your jumper platform. You will not need the transporter. If we do that, then the power device you have attached to our system could allow the station to exist in the upper atmosphere for longer. Yes? I suppose, Ronnie said, looking at John, clearly looking for guidance. John nodded at him, indicating he could answer. Based on the modifications we made, the station could remain in that higher atmosphere for perhaps 2 or 3 weeks before the power fails again. But you could return in that time with the necessary materials to sustain the power levels for longer, and to also fix the station's original power device. Rodney nodded. Yes? But someone else could come here when we're done, John warned. What if the next person or race that finds the station uses it to harm you again? It is a risk we are willing to take. John shook his head. Why? I don't understand. We would rather have the chance to speak with more aliens like you, the voice said, than never have that chance again. John frowned. It seemed insane. They were actually willing to risk their whole people, their whole existence, everything, just for the chance to speak with them again. Are you sure? Ronnie asked. Even if your chance to speak with others might not happen again for a long time and be as fleeting as your time was with us? Yes, it is worth the risk. John rubbed at his burning chest. These aliens suddenly made him feel like a real coward. Worth the risk. Jennifer's words. Even if, John said weakly, after we leave, no one ever comes back. Dangerous. The voice repeated, almost gentle, but beautiful. Despite himself, John found himself looking over at Rodney. Rodney. His Rodney, who wasn't looking at him. His quick, intense blue eyes were focused on monitoring the station and the power output from the generator, mind spinning at a speed that John could only wonder at, fingers dancing over the controls to keep ahead of whatever might go wrong. A mind that definitely moved faster than 200 miles per hour. What if this were his choice? What if he had to choose between being safe and never speaking to Rodney again, never being with him, never getting to even see him? He thought of how he felt when Rodney almost died in that cell, how he felt when he lost him to that solar flare, how he would feel about Rodney simply leaving him, walking away, because John was too afraid to tell him that he wanted him to stay. What would he risk? Everything, the voice inside him said. Yes. Yes, he would. And something inside his chest, the burning knot that had been there now for months, ever since that moment in the cell, unwound, loosening bands around his heart that he didn't even know were there until just that moment. Oh my God. He was in love with him. He must have gasped or done something odd, because Rodney was looking at him now, all concern and worry. John? Rodney, he stuttered. I'm going to leave the chamber now, John, Taylor said then, interrupting him. Ronan and I will be up with you and Rodney soon. Is there anything else you wish to say to these creatures before that happens? John released a heavy breath. Right. They weren't alone, and they had a mission to complete. No, he said, his voice halting, feeling a little like he was on the edge of a dam that was about to break. He just had to hold it together a little while longer. No, I'm good. Come on up. Ronnie tried very hard not to scream. He was inside a tornado, buoyed by winds and power that he could not even describe. He had no idea if this was one creature or many of them, but the tiny bubble of space between himself and the winds rotating around him at close to 500 miles per hour was terrifying. Then, perhaps seconds after this tornado had wrapped around him in the station's airlock, he was standing on the jumper platform, breathing heavily and trying very hard not to vomit in his suit. The air surrounding him was still toxic, the corrosive gases doing a number on the spacesuit's fabrics and sensors, but at least the tornado that had ferried him along was gone. Around him, he saw three others, all equally staggered by the experience. He gestured towards the airlock that led into the jumper platform station, and they all quickly stumbled their way across to it. Rodney stepped into the airlock, the others with him, and shut the door. In moments, the air had cycled, switching to the rich oxygen and nitrogen atmosphere they all knew and loved. Love. The lights turned green, the door leading into the jumper platform opened, and Rodney pulled his gloves and helmet off. He grinned at the others as they did the same. They all grinned back. "Another save for Team Shepherd," John said cheekily. He reached out to grab Rodney's shoulder, eyes bright with a warmth Rodney hadn't seen in months. "Let's get the jumper and go home." A massive burst of bright light, and John was gone. "Shepherd!" Ronan shouted. Rodney just stared. Taylor grabbed at his sleeve. "What just happened?" she asked. That was an Asgard beam," Rodney said dumbly. "They've taken him." "The Asgard are still here," Ronan said. "I don't know," Rodney said. He felt stuck. "We have the jumper," Taylor said earnestly, tugging harder at his sleeve. "We must see if we can catch them." "Yes, right, Taylor and Ronan were already running, so much faster than him, and he struggled to keep up in the uncomfortable orange spacesuits as they made their way swiftly through the few corridors that led to the jumper, its hatch still open as they left it where it had connected to the platform. Running inside, tossing the helmet and gloves onto the benches, Ronnie dove into the pilot chair, calling up the HUD. Taylor shut the hatch and came up, settling into the co-pilot seat and helping to bring up additional sensors. Ronan just stood behind Rodney, gripping his chair. Rodney disengaged from the station and as fast as he could flew them straight up out of the upper atmosphere and into the blanket of space. "There," Taylor shouted, pointing. The sensors confirmed her sight. It was a rogue Asgard ship. "Stop them," Ronan said, shoving at Ronnie's chair. For once, Rodney didn't question, gunning the jumper toward the Asgard ship and opening the weapons pod. "Where can I hit that won't destroy the ship?" he said to Taylor. I don't know," she answered, her fingers hitting keys. The HUD shifted, the jumper trying to make sense of the Asgard ship schematics, a portion of the rear engines lit in red. "There," she said. "Hit them." A hyperspace window appeared in front of the Asgard ship. "No!" Ronan shouted. "Do something!" Rodney fired the drone, and it sped toward the Asgard ship and hit nothing. The ship was gone, the hyperspace portal drawing the ship in faster than the drone could move. "No," Taylor whispered. "Can we?" Ronan looked lost. "Is there any way to track them?" Rodney pressed his lips together in a thin line. He started calling up information, everything that the jumper had downloaded and learned about the Asgard ship that had taken John. "Rodney, we can't track them," he said, his anger growing as he looked at the data. "But we're not losing him either." His eyes skimmed over the information, then back out the jumper's window. "We will get him back," he said. The end. Continued in part 5 of I Sometimes Wonder, Pilot.